inviting me to speak, and also the Field Institute for hosting me the last 2 months. It's been great, but unfortunately I'm going home soon to teach linear algebra. But so I decided to talk about some fairly old stuff. So this is really a propaganda talk. I want you to read and use this paper. So if you go to Krelish homepage and download it, supposing you have your university has paid some money, you'll get a file which is unreadable for some reason. So what you should do is send me an email, and I'll give you one that is readable. But I don't have the guts to put it on my homepage. so caused me I've sort of been looking for a chance to talk about this for a long time, and the reason is that I think there are some ideas in this paper, but perhaps buried fairly deeply, that could be of use to the structure and classification community. At the time when we wrote this paper, we were very excited about applications to matrix stability problems in the along the lines of Lin's theorem, as proved differently by Michael and Peter Fries. And there are some applications to certain C-square algebras that look like what we would call two-dimensional non-commutative CW complexes. So this is really what we were focused on at the time, but maybe in hindsight the more interesting part of the paper is the one-dimensional part, where we prove a certain kind of lifting result for certain C-square algebras that I hear about a lot in talks like at a conference like this. So this is really what I would like to emphasize on. So before I start, you saw my list of co-authors. I would like to make an announcement regarding this picture, which I think is relevant for a lot of you. So this picture was taken, this is Kjell Petersen, was taken at his 60th birthday as a present from the participants in a symposium in his honor when he turned 60, and so there was we had to be contributions from all the guests, or most of the guests, and this as a present to get, we gave him this picture. So it must have been a big surprise. So what I would like to tell you is that this picture, I've given Matt Scant the permission to use that on the inside of the cover of Matt Scant number 100, which is devoted to the memory of Gett. So that means that if you participated in this present, then it sort of has gone into math literature. I think that's a nice thought now that we don't have the original. So what I'd like to talk about is semi-perfectivity, and I think many of you know what it is. It's a concept that was defined by Bruce in 85, I think, also a math scant. So A is a semi-projective C-square algebra if there is a lifting property of maps out of A, as indicated on this diagram. And what this means is that you have an increasing sequence of ideals, so I1 is inside I2, and so on, and you have the map from E mod out by the union of the ideals. And then you want to be able to assert that you can lift that map, everything start on the not all the way to the beginning of that chain, but somewhere. So there is an N, and a star homomorphism lifting the given maps like this. And a good place to read about this is a paper Bruce wrote. It's called Semi-Productivity in Simple C-square Algebras. And in fact, what I will talk about is in a sense orthogonal to this, because I'm going to talk about semi-productivity in non-simple C-square Algebras, but actually when you read the paper, he snuck in some non-simple results as well. So this is also relevant for what I would like to talk about.
Sorry, may I just ask?
Yes.
Is that the definition exactly equivalent to the one where the ideals come from finite direct sums of an orthogonal sequence? The direct product or the direct sum?
No, that's a weaker notion. So that is probably precisely the notion that's called weak semi-perfectivity. So to give you some examples, so first of all, I mean, semi permittivity is a fairly rare property of a C-star algebra. So I mean, if you just take any random C-star algebra, you will get a non-semi projective C-star algebra. But of course, the things that we would like to think about have a tendency of being semi projective. So here are some examples of some C-star algebras more or less well known. So the matrices will be as a semi projective C-star algebra. C of the interval, C of the circle, they're all semi-projective C-star algebras, and I will explain in a moment how that comes about by knowing something about the way they're given as universal C-star algebras for certain generators and relations. So we heard about this C-star algebra yesterday. So this is the C-star algebra that comes up in the sort of canonical construction for Jansu algebra. So that's where you have a function on the interval with PQ matrix value, it's a PQ matrix value function, and it has the property that at one end you get P by P matrices, and at the other end you get Q by Q matrices. So of course, for this to make sense, I have to choose some sort of canonical embedding of MP into MPQ and MQ into MPQ. But this turns out to be an important C-star algebra in this construction, and it's in fact semi-projective. There's also something called QC. This name is it's a name that comes from the work of Kunz, but it's pretty easy to describe what it is. It's this time a non-universal C-star algebra with 2x2 matrix-valued functions. It vanishes at 0, and at 1 it's diagonal. So it's a lot like what Chris talked about as an example like that yesterday. And other examples of semi-projective C-star algebras are all Kunz-Krieger algebras, in particular the Kunz algebra is semi-projective, and the Toeplitz algebra is also semi-projective. So there's lots of examples, as you can see, fairly different kind of C-star algebras. We have infinite and finite and so on. But these little check marks have to do with, these are the ones that are covered, if you like, by the result that I would like to talk about. So before I go on to say something about how you prove semi-permittivity, let me spend some time on what it means. So there's a reformulation which is called stable relations. I'm being a little bit vague about what it means, so let me just try to give you the idea. So suppose you have a C-star algebra which is given by generators and relations. So it's a universal C-star algebra. What would it mean for that to be semi-projective? Well, it means roughly that suppose you have a representation of your generators and relations in some C-star algebra A, which is not quite a representation, but a delta representation, meaning that the relations are not satisfied exactly, but up to some small error. So this is what I mean by saying GI delta satisfies R in A. That means you have some choices of generators. They don't satisfy the relations, but they're pretty close. And also you have a map from A into a quotient map out of A with the property that when you go to the quotient you get exact satisfaction, so these will actually precisely satisfy the relation. So upstairs I have something that is pretty close, and downstairs I have something which is on the nose. Then semi-permittivity means that I can perturb these upstairs generators a little bit. So for all epsilon, there is delta, in such a way that now they do satisfy precisely, and I haven't moved the image in the quotient. So these were upstairs, they were wrong by a certain error, downstairs they were correct. Now I can move them just a little bit so that now they're correct, and it's still the same downstairs. That's what semi-projectivity means, and there are some weaker notions which are also interesting, related to what you mentioned, George, which where you don't get the sort of downstairs matching up. There's also another observation which makes it fairly obvious why it's relevant for classification of C-star algebras given by inductive limits. This is, and in fact, I should say that right away, that most of these fundamental results about semi-projectivities are due to Bruce. So, and you can find them either in Bruce's first paper from 85, or in Terry's book, or in the newer paper, or all of them. So, the semiperjectivity here, this is a consequence of semiperjectivity, so suppose I know that A is semiperjective, and I have a map from A into B, which is given as an inductive limit. Well, then I can pull this map back into the system in such a way, as indicated, so not the whole way, but to some Dn. The problem is that this will not commute exactly, but it will commute up to homotopy, and actually I will get pointwise convergence to the original map. But when you have this, this is also fairly easy now to see lots of C2 alphas cannot be semi-projective. And the most fundamental example perhaps would be compact operators, because of course you can write the compact operators as an inductive limit where you just take bigger and bigger matrices. So if I put compact here and there, there's no way I could pull that back. So that explains why the compact operators are not, that's not a semi-projective system.
So you assert the existence of these as actually C star homomorphisms?
Yes. Yeah.
But this is not equivalent homomorphism.
If it's not equivalent, it's pretty close. I didn't check that.
Okay.
So the
thing about semiprojectivity is that it's pretty complicated to work out precisely what C-star alphas are semiprojective. So I want to talk about the lack of closure properties of the classes of semiprojective C-star alphas. And the reason why I'm doing that is mainly because I want to explain why this result that we have, which will look fairly reasonable, I think, to you, why it's so complicated to prove. And the short explanation for that is that we don't have the closure properties of the classic semiprojective C-star alphas that we would like. On the other hand, I mean, it doesn't seem to be absolutely necessary for classification to have a full understanding of semiprojectivity. All we need would be sort of enough semiprojective C-star alphas. And we have, it seems to be important to have enough semiprojective C-star alphas, but maybe we don't need to know precisely which ones. But as time passes on, I get increasingly curious as to what precisely does the class of semiprojective C-star alphas look like. So, I mean, one result that will give us a lot of semiprojective C-star alphas is this result by Jack Spielberg, who says that if you have a purely infinite C-star algebra with finite degenerated K-theory and torsion-free K1, then it's semi-projective. So Bruce proved that if you have a purely infinite C-star algebra which is semi-projective, then it has to be has to have finite degenerated K-theory. And it's a conjecture that if and only if. Right?
Don't you
want
to put a UCT
that
algebra
in
there?
Yes.
And it's purely infinite and simple, so it's not... Well, first of all, yes, that's right. I mean, purely infinite and simple, and I also mean UCT, thanks. That's important.
Yeah, UCT and
the
nuclear, etc.
Yeah, and the usual stuff. I'm sorry. Yes. So we don't know if this is a necessary condition, and I know some people who would like to have this property removed from the theorem, like Marius would like that, I think, because it has implications in various deep results about classification, where you really need as many semi-projective models as you can get. So, and... Yes. So weak semi-projectivity has been established for this class. But semi-projectivity seems to be needed in certain applications, like the one that's a joint paper of Myers and George. This comes up. So we have this result, as you see, it's fairly old, that any pullback of a diagram like this is semi-projective if you have finite dimensional C2 algebras, F0 and F1. So let me explain what this means. So I have a finite dimensional C2 algebra F0, and I have a finite dimensional C2 algebra F1. And I will look at F0 here, and I will look at the F1 value function, so the interval there, and I will make a pullback precisely in the spirit of what Christy did today. So the pullback will be elements in the direct sum of these two things that coincide after we map them down to two copies of F1. So the map downward here is a given map in Stockholm homomorphism, and the map over here is the evaluation of the two endpoints of the interval. So essentially what we're doing in a construction like this is that we're taking a matrix or a finite dimensional C2 and we're putting it over an interval, and then we're doing some extra gluing boundary conditions at the endpoints. And this will cover a lot of these fundamental examples of semi-projective C2 algebras, something like all of these here. So, for instance, to get the IPQ, and essentially what I would take as my P1, I would take the PQ matrices, and then as my P0, I would take MP plus MQ, and then I would just take the embedding into the two endpoints that's more or less suppressed here. So I can make all these kinds of things. This will allow me also, of course, to get a circle by identifying the endpoints of the interval, and there's all kinds of
combinations that you can do. I've always been fascinated by this example, which I think Chris told me it has applications in exponential rank, where you could take, say, something like this. So I have the 3x3 matrices, and at the endpoint, I want the diagonal matrices, and I want them to have the form AAB over here and AAB over there. That's an example of a C2 algebra which is covered by our results, so that's an example of a semi-projective C2 algebra.
So there's a certain amount. Oh, is this class? Okay, so let's talk a little bit about closure properties of the class of semi-projective C2 algebras, and I just learned how to chat, so this is and I should warn you, these results, these will look like one line things that you prove with a one line proof, but it's actually a little more complicated than that. So
A and B are semi-projective precisely when their direct sum is semi-projective. If A is non-unital, then A is semi-projective. If unitization is semi-projective, and if A is semi-projective, then the matrices over A will be semi-projective. And I should have asked Bruce yesterday, but didn't get a chance. So the other implication is true if it's unital. And I'm pretty sure it's still open if it's not. So this gives you an idea of, so this is a little more tricky than you might think.
So bad news about closure property is if you look in an extension,
so if you have a choice actually from the algebras, well, nothing is true. So X can be semi-projective without A or B being semi-projective, or you can have A and B being semi-projective without X being semi-projective. And to give you an idea of what that looks like, let's pass to the
abelian C2 algebra.
So in the abelian category, being semi-projective is the same as having a spectrum, which is an absolute neighborhood free track. But being semi-projective, I mean, what talking about? I mean, that's the lifting property if you assume that not only the original C2 algebras, but also the things that you're lifting between are abelian. But if you want a general lifting result, then semi-projectivity this is what we're talking about, is more restrictive. But you still get that it has to be an absolute neighborhood free track. If you don't know what that means, it's not going to hurt you. And also, it cannot contain a closed set which is homeomorphic to a disk. of dimension 2 of E. So, I mean, being semi-projective, even for C of X, is fairly restrictive, and it's also not completely worked out precisely what you need to satisfy to be a semi-projective convenience observer. But we have lots of examples. So, I mean, if we take this space,
that's a nice space that contains, that has these two properties. And in fact, we've already seen that this is semi-projective. But of course, this will contain lots of spaces which are not ANRs. So, I mean, because ANR means that you can retract back from a neighborhood on it. So for instance, if you have a convergent sequence of points, this is something which is not ANR, so this is not a semi-projective C-star algebra. So that shows you that you can have a closed subset or an open subset of a semi-projective space, which will not give you a semi-projective space. So this shows you that ideals and quotients, even in the abelian case, can fail to be semi-projective, even though the big space is semi-projective. And you also don't get this closure result. I mean, what would it mean if you would like to know that if you have an ideal and a quotient which are both semi-projective, then the middle C-star algebra is semi-projective. That's like in the abelian categories. It's like having an open semi-projective space and a closed semi-projective space, and take the union and you get a semi-projective space. And this a fast counterexample for this is the topology sine curve. And you have over here, I have a line that's a semi-projective space, and over here I have another line which fluctuates like this, that's also a semi-projective space, and when I take the union I get something which is not an ANR. So this is not a semi-projective system. So all these nice properties that you would like for extensions fail, and this is a motivation for why we have to do quite a lot more than that you would hope to prove semi-projectivity of these C-star algebras that we work with. So, for completeness, or maybe in these, some of these things could probably be true. I couldn't think of a counterexample. So, if you have semi-projective A and B, and you have an extension, and you assume that B is finite dimensional, then the middle C-star algebra should be. Maybe that's a bold guess. So Bruce has made this into a formal conjecture, and I would also buy that. So that's the specialized case where you say that B is just a one-dimensional C-star algebra. And furthermore, we assume that this is a split extension. So X is a split extension of A with C. That's like a unification gone wrong, because it could be
So you're still in the community case?
No. In the community case, this is true.
But in the general case, it's open. Okay. So what dimension you just mean is a vector space?
Yes. and also, maybe another, this is certainly related, maybe a pullback could have a property of being semi-projective if you know that these three C-star algebras are semi-projective, except that's actually false. So I would like to assume that the maps are somehow have a big image, so they could be subjections, but maybe a little more general. I would ask for that to be proper, which means that it takes, each map will take an approximate image or approximate image, something like this. But we don't know that, so that's why it becomes quite complicated to prove that a pullback like this is semi-projective for finite dimensional C-star algebras.
So, I mean, all the ingredients are certainly semi-projective. So I can take, like, C of 0, 1, that's a semi-projective C-star algebra. I can put on matrices, that's a semi-projective C-star algebra. I could do that with some other matrices over here, and I can add it up. It still becomes a semi-projective C-star algebra. So I certainly get that this part of the algebra is semi-projective, and the same with F0. And I also have an extension in an obvious way. I'll need that in a moment so I can write it up right away. So maybe I'll do it over here. This is an extension
and I'll do it in a...
For reasons that will become obvious, I will draw my extension vertically. So if A is this pullback, then it's obvious that it has an appeal, which is just the suspension of F1, and it's not obvious actually it's false, that the quotient would be F0, but by an easy assumption, I can assume that the quotient is F0. So A, this pullback that I'm trying to prove is semi-projective, is certainly an extension of something which is semi-projective by something which is semi-projective. But we don't have the closure result, even for a finite dimension piece of rubber, that would allow us to prove directly that A was semi-projective. So we have to come up with something else, and this is what I'd like to talk about. So,
what we came up with, and this is sort of an exclusive we, because this is something that came out of work that Gerd and Terry had done before. I was just proving lemmas, and but these concepts I think can be quite useful in considerations related to this problem. So this is really what I'm trying to promote. So there's two concepts. One is called a conditionally semi-projective diagram, and the other one is called the corona extendable map. So a conditionally projective or semi-projective Caesar diagram is a square of Caesar algebras with a property that looks like semi-projectivity. So maybe I'll do the conditionally semi-projective first. So I will say that this diagram with the A is conditionally semi-projective if I have a lifting property that's indicated by this arrow here. So this means that I have a map out of the 1-1 corner to some quotient like this, and I also have a map out of the 0-1 corner up here. So that's like a partial lifting of not the original algebra, but the one upstairs to something here. And then conditional semi-projectivity means that I can lift to a map like this, making the diagram here. Okay, so I understand you can think this is a strange notion, but it sort of comes quite naturally out of some specialized results that Gerd and Terry and Henry had about proving semi-projectivity. So this is a notion that you can come up with for four Caesar algebras in a commutative diagram. So all, I should emphasize, all maps here are star homomorphisms and all triangles and squares. And you can also talk about conditional projectivity, so that just means that you can lift the whole way. I haven't talked about projective Caesar algebras. That's a notion that also exists, but it's not relevant for what I would like to talk about. But I need the conditionally projective diagrams. So, of course, that's a generalization. Conditional semi-projectivity is a generalization of semi-projectivity. You just take a trivial diagram like this, and they can see that it's the same. But to give you an idea of how this is useful, let me show you a diagram which is sort of non-trivially conditionally projective. So what I will do is I will take again two finite dimensional Caesar algebras, and I will have F1 sitting inside F2. And now I will make, we call this the crushed telescope, but so you can see the definition, it functions with values in F2 with the property that over zero, it's really sitting in F1. So it's F2 valued functions, but it's in F1 at the left endpoint. And then you take the canonical map that sends F1 into this telescope just by constant extension. And the result then says that this is a conditionally projective Caesar algebra. So this means, I mean, since we have equality here, this part of the diagram is fairly irrelevant, but this means that if I have a map here into some quotient which is already lifted to F1, then I can lift it down there as well. And if you see, for instance, for those of you who know what a projective Caesar algebra is, the first example is just the cone, and that's like taking F1 equals 0, then of course the partial lifting doesn't mean anything, and that's
amounts to honest productivity. So this is something that you can prove relatively directly, but it turns out to be important for the proof. There's also a result like this, and this is really the deepest result we have. It sort of came out of another paper that was related to understanding what happens to diagrams like this, where you have two extensions that are intertwined by three maps like this. So what it says is that suppose you have a finite dimensional quotient like what we have over here and what we're trying to deal with, and you have a diagram consisting of two extensions like this, and then some fairly specialized properties of the map alpha. So the map alpha goes from the ideal to the ideal, and what we would like to be true is that the image of under alpha is an ideal of A1, and it has a unit there. So there's an element of A1 which acts as a unit on the image of A under alpha. So suppose we have this, then this is a conditional semi-projective diagram. So you take this square here and you transpose it, then you get a conditionally semi-projective sister algorithm. And this is really the closest we could get to an extension result with the quotient being finite dimensional as the one that I was hoping, I'm still hoping is true, but we couldn't prove it, but we could get this, and as you'll see in a moment, this is enough to prove semi-projectivity of that the sister algorithm we're talking about. The other technical concept is what's called corona extensibility, and this is something that was there's a lot of work by Terry Gett on this. So first of all, let's look at the definition, and I realize you will find this quite strange. So if you have it's a stock of morphism, it goes from A to B, so to sister algorithms. We will call it corona extendable if whenever there is a map out of A into a corona algebra, so that's a multiplier algebra modulo the sister algebra itself for some non-unital, and it has to be sigma-unital sister algebra E. So suppose that I have a map out of A into this very special type of sister algebra, then it extends through that map. So, no, but sigma unital and non-unital. So that's enough to get a fairly strange sister algebra up here. So, this looks like something that would almost never be true. I mean, how can you be sure to factorize a map out of A through this forward map? Of course, it has to be injective, or you won't have a chance. But since the sister algebra over here is really a very special kind of sister algebra, you have all these tricks that you can do, like strict convergence and things like that. This is not as restrictive as you might think. And in fact, this is an observation by Gett and Terry. This being corona extendable is very closely related to Kasparov's technical theorem in KK theory. So if you have a map that looks like this, so this is a drawing of a map from C01 to C01, this composed with this map here. So that's like stretching the center of the interval in your map. And you can center on by D, and I think D can be pretty much anything, but probably separable, I don't remember precisely, but then this is a corona extendable map. So this map that you get by prolonging the center of the interval becomes corona extendable, even after you tensor on pretty much anything. So this shows you that there are corona extendable maps, and in fact, if you look at the proof of this, it's pretty much the same as Kasparov's. Yeah. So, as the Kasparov technical theorem. So, this is a notion which will be useful for us, and we proved this result about getting Corona extendable maps, which ties up these two notions that I've talked about. So, if you have a commutative diagram, this is again two extensions in a diagram like this. This time I want the ideals to be the same, but I'm not asking anything about them. Then, supposing I know that this map beta is conditionally projective in the sense that this diagram is conditionally projective, just like in the lemma that I showed you before, then the middle map is corona extendable. So this is a way of getting a supply of corona extendable. And now I think I'm ready to give you an idea for proof that this is a semi-projective result. So let me just So my aim is to prove that A, which is defined as C of 0, 1 into F0 direct sum F1 square F1, my aim is to prove that this is a semi-projective C-square. And I have all these tools here, so let's see how that would go. So, what I would like to do is I want to get in the situation where I can use the theorem that I mentioned some slides ago, would be here, allowing me to say that a certain square was conditionally semi-projective. So I want to get in the situation where I can use that here, and so to use that theorem, I have to have the same quotient in my diagram, and it has to be a finite dimensional C-square. I do have that. And in fact, I'll put the precise same extension over here, like this. But I need, as you see, I need the image of this C-square, which is an ideal in here, which has a unit. And I'll do that by making a map that looks a lot like the stretching map in the Kasparov technical theorem, but I will stretch at the endpoint. So I'll just indicate the map by this drawing. Hope that makes sense. So I will simply take, I mean, this is a function from 0, 1 interval into F1, and so is this. And to get from here to there, I will compose by this map. Is that the same stretching map? It's not the same stretching map as before. In fact, I'm stretching at the endpoint. So this is not covered by the adjacency. But if I do the same stretching here, this will be a commutative diagram. And now you can see I'm in the situation that I need, because the image here, these are functions that vanish at zero, but after I compose this map, this will be functions that vanish from like zero to a third and two thirds to one. So this is actually an ideal, and this is an ideal that has a unit inside this. I'll just take the unit of F1 and then put that here and then taper off somehow. So this will satisfy the conditions of the theorem. So this is now a conditionally semi-projective theorem. So let's see if I can put that to use. So I want to prove that I can lift maps like this, and I need a final piece of information to finish the argument, namely that Terry proved that to prove semi-projectivity, you can actually assume that this is a corona algorithm. So proving semi-projectivity for the full class of targets is the same as proving semi-projectivity of the class, a very restricted class of targets being grown alphas. So I may assume, if I want, and I really do want that, that this is a corona alpha. Now we can talk about corona extendability. So what I will do is I will prove that this is a semi-projective C-square alpha. So I'm pointing here and not there, of course the same C-square alpha, but I want to prove this cup is semi-projective. So now I'm given a map that looks like this, and I have to lift it to T modulo something. In a moment, I'll try to convince you that this is a corona extendable map,
has the stretching flavor as in the Casper theorem, and in fact it's covered by the final slide. I'll show you that in a moment, but if you believe that for a second, then this will allow me to take this map and write it as a composition of these two maps. Now, I have a map here, and this, we already know, is a semi-projective C-cell. So this is a semi-projective C-cell algebra, so I have a map here, so I can lift that to E modulo IN, like this, so that the whole thing will commute. And of course, there's a quotient map like this. Now, I happen to know that this is a Corona, this is a conditionally semi-projective diagram, and I have a map out of this part, so this means that I can lift out of this guy, not up here, but to something else. But that's good enough, because really, that's what I've been able to do, is I've been able to take this map and lift it. That's what I have to do to prove. So the remaining piece of information I need is that this map is Corona extendable.
And this we get out of the this result here.
Let me just indicate that.
So I will take SF1, A0, and here I will take, I think this looks like this. So, you see this time I have to put equal sign here. And this is going to be my original extension, the one that I'm talking about over there. But here I'm going to have to change things, because what I would like to prove is that the map that goes like this is Corona extensible. So in order to make this diagram commute, I'm going to have to put the natural map that also looks like that down here, so that things commute. And then, of course, what this means is that the image of this algebra in here is a lot smaller than what it used to be, so the quotient is much bigger. And in fact, it turns out that the quotient is this crushed telescope that we talked about. The lemma.
Is A the pullback
or C the pullback? A is a pullback of something like that. But it will work the same way. So you see, this is the kind of map that we prove was, we prove is conditionally projective. That means that this is a Corona extendable map. And then
I'm done.
Well, this is what we call these objects. I don't know if it was a good idea, but so we something like this we would call a one-dimensional non-commutative CW complex, because it's like the cell is like an interval with some matrices over it, and you do some gluing, and then you can do this in the next dimension. The cell would be a two-dimensional thing with some matrices and some gluing, and in fact when Bruce explained to us what the C-Sto algebra of the group C-Sto algebra for the semi-direct product of set by set, that's an example of a two-dimensional CW complex, because the cell is like it's like a disk, and you have some matrices, and then you have a gluing condition. And in fact, we proved, and I don't think that's important for you, but we proved that this has matrix stable relations. So if you represent it into a matrix algebra, you get the same kind of epsilon delta result as in Lin's theorem for a Hermitian. So.
What your double line means in your maths? The previous maths?
What, I'm sorry. Oh, there, yeah.
That's the map which is the equality.
Is that the equality map?
Okay. Yeah, and I'm thinking of it as a map going this way.
Not
as
a question.
Right.
Do you have something for me?
The answer is no, but I'm wondering if, maybe there should be something. There should be something. And I would guess, because, of course, something which is illegal is something like this. For instance, suppose I have the interval with 2x2 matrices and I require it to be, say, diagonal over points like this. This is not a semi-projective C-theorem, but I think it would be Weakley's semi-projective. I would have to check. So anyway, we didn't do anything, but I would be pretty sure that there must be something.
Could you write some Weakley's semi-projective?
It's the kind of I hope I said this right. So I should also remind myself, but I think it's really this kind of lifting property that George was mentioning. So you have to lift to so maybe did I get that right?
Well, I was just going to ask about the weak semi-projectivity. You know, it seems to me that's often what is interesting in a technical setting. So I'm wondering if similar techniques to what you've been describing might be
I would guess so. But maybe at the time we didn't really realize the importance of weak semi-projectivity. This is why I wish I could say I have a student working on this.
So
we have something a lot like that. So that's the other half of this paper. So if you ask for things, so you should look at the Friis-Wieland proof of Lenz's theorem and the conditions in there, and then you can pretty much do it for the same kind of C-surface, except here you can run into K-theoretical obstructions, because essentially you have to punch holes in something which is topologically much more complicated than just the disk. So if the K-theoretical obstructions go away, and you have something which is, they call it IR, stable rank one would be enough, or is certainly true, then yes, you can get something like that.
I just wanted to clarify if that map lifts is clear.
Yeah.
Okay. You can say yes. And again,